Welcome. This is On Mic with Jordan Rich, the podcast dedicated to conversation with creative, passionate people from the arts and all walks of life. I'm launching this particular podcast on the 4th of July weekend, 2020, which continues to be a tough year for all of us as we celebrate our nation's birthday. But I believe it's important to remember that which has made this country so great. Today, a double feature for you, two stories heralding the contributions of Americans, both overseas and here at home. You'll be hearing from a local office furniture company, AIS, that has launched a campaign to produce 1 million masks so needed during the current pandemic. We'll talk about the nationwide campaign, the fact that they're using the image of Rosie the Riveter, famous for inspiring the population during World War II. These are ordinary Americans stepping up, and you can join them in the cause. But first, a conversation I just had with Ed Mitchell, a proud veteran and the executive director of the Veterans Northeast Outreach Center, VNEOC.org on the web, based in Haverhill. Now, I've met and promoted a lot of programs for vets over the years, but I am so impressed with what the folks at VNOC, as they're known, are doing to help veterans and their families with housing, employment, counseling, and much more. It's truly a service that others around the country are looking to model, and for good reason. So let's first welcome Ed Mitchell, and let's go on, Mike. It's different than a lot of other veterans groups that I've run into for many reasons, but how do you describe it to somebody for the first time?
Well, good question. First of all, I'm extremely proud to be the executive officer of this organization because it is so special and so unique in what we provide. Originally established in 1985 as a storefront operation in Lawrence, helping our Vietnam veterans, and it's expanded. We've relocated to Haverhill, and now we're providing over 200 affordable housing units to our veterans and family members. But what makes us unique is we're not just providing the housing for our veterans, we're providing the full wraparound services that will help ensure that they remain housed and never fall back into the dilemma of being homeless. And what I mean by that, we provide employment opportunities and training. We provide compensation and pension claims requests to make sure our veterans are receiving their full benefits, whether it's a disability or a pension. And we provide financial assistance so that the veterans can get a better grip on their financial issues that basically cause them to become homeless. And we have various programs that help with that, whether it's our supportive services for veterans and families or our financial advocates. And in addition to that, we also have an extremely effective food pantry where we provide food on Tuesdays and Thursdays where they can pick up probably save $100 a week just on the food pantry items. And that's thanks to the outstanding partners we have in the community, like Mass Military, the Department of Veterans Services, and the VA as well.
Now, this has to be mentioned. You're a standalone organization, right? You're not officially connected to the VA, but it's veterans helping veterans, and it's taken off in a big way, huh?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, again, we do have strong partners that support us through grants or donations, whether it's, you know, the Merrimack Valley Merchants Associations, our local veteran service officers are a big part of our support network as well. And there are just so many to mention. I probably should have a list, but we're a standalone, but we do rely a lot on grants to support our different programs and services that we do provide, ranging from transportation for our veterans to and from their VA medical appointments and possibly employment interviews and things like that.
I got wind of a story that I'd love you to share, if you don't mind, about a man, I believe he's in his late 80s, who through a series of circumstances wound up homeless. And a very proud veteran. Do you know the story I'm referring to?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, then I won't ask. John told
me.
Well,
if a little bit more, I might.
Okay, but I can take the question out. I was thinking that John told me about this guy. He's like 88 years old, and he came up to live with his family in a condo, and they wouldn't allow an extra person in the condo. And if you don't know the story, don't worry about it.
This during the COVID period?
I think it's recently. But I'll tell you what, rather than that, can I ask you to give a few examples of the kinds of men and women you've helped, maybe just from your perspective?
Sure.
Let me ask it this way. Ed, there are so many great stories coming out of the center. Do you have a couple off the top that you could share with us about success?
Sure. I have one really so many. One really extraordinary example is our most recent member to our board of directors, who was here back in 2013, was a homeless veteran who actually came up here from New York and with a child, homeless, and my predecessor, John Racka, brought him right in, provided him housing at no cost because he had no income. They helped him file for his disability, stabilized him, provided the supported network to get him gainfully employed, and just right now he is a full-time realtor. Has a house, his own house in Lawrence, and is doing extremely well to the point now he's an important member of our board of directors.
That's awesome.
So going from homeless to where he is in such a short period of time, really, from 2013 to now owning his home, own home, and being extremely successful realtor in the area.
That's a terrific, very inspiring story. Can we quantify the impact of mental stress on veterans' plights? I mean, it's been the case for forever that men, mainly men in battle, now women suffer from what used to be called battle fatigue and now PTSD. But until very recently, it wasn't attended to. Is that one of the reasons we have such a serious issue with our vets?
It really doesn't have to stem from battle, although that's certainly a serious contributor to issues with our veterans. Our peacetime veterans are the veterans that served between post-Vietnam 1975 to basically 1990. They still have issues as well. In fact, my personal opinion is just going surviving boot camp is pretty traumatic to an individual because what they do in boot camp is basically break you down so that they can rebuild you into, being an effective team member in a military organization. And sometimes people can't survive that event. And it weighs on them, or they are able to make that transition. And then 4 years later, when they leave the military, now they have to transition back to being a civilian. And sometimes that's in itself is traumatic. So and can weigh on you and create anxiety and stress and depression. So, it doesn't necessarily have to be related to battle, although that certainly is a big factor nowadays.
But as you're saying this, I'm knowledgeable of many programs that are just starting to take shape over the last 4 or 5 years that are addressing these issues. I mean, people sometimes ask, why are so many veterans who had military positions and had the opportunity to come back and live again, why are they homeless? Why are they dealing with so much strife? And I think the answer is obvious. There's so much pressure on them.
There is, our Veterans Northeast Outreach Center logo is a V shape, and it has the three basic colors of our nation's flag: the red, white, and blue. And it has white stars that are transitioning into blue stars, and that's symbolic to the plight of our veterans transitioning from that military mindset back into the civilian side of things. And it can be an extremely difficult transition to do on your own, especially when you're accustomed to having your comrades beside you, that you basically, you know, you put your lives in their hands, you rely on each other, and now that support network isn't there and you're on your own. So that transition from military life back into civilian life is certainly challenging.
We talked a little bit about housing. There are many examples, and the stats are on the site. People can visit VNEOC.org and get a load of what you guys have been doing for the last 30 years. But I also wanted to talk about housing, employment, of course, but also about outreach and support services, kind of general topics. But there's some specific programs that are really working that you would be happy, I'm sure, to share with
us. Yeah, absolutely. Especially nowadays during this COVID pandemic, you know, you talk about stresses and anxiety, you know, during this time where we actually had to close down our service center, you know, where veterans can come into our facility and use our computers and sit down and have donuts and coffee with their fellow veterans and talk. And, well, due to the, you know, the separation requirements, we had to prevent that. And so for the most part, our veterans are sheltered in place, and that can create anxiety. And we realized that, and we stepped up our food pantry services so that we actually provide Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday food pantry. And our quality of food has increased, too, because, again, the exceptional support we have from throughout the community. But in addition to that, we have always provided a hot meal for our veterans here at the campus, as well as our satellite locations. We have facilities in Methuen and Bedford as well, that we provide hot meals to. And that in itself is an important staple to that peace of mind. And we didn't want that to be interrupted. And our staff has really stepped up and made sure that our veterans had that consistency in their lives, even during these, you know, troublesome times. So that's been a great factor in it. But other programs we have is like our transition in place, where we have veterans housed in an apartment complex, and their first few months is actually rent free, so it allows them to pay down some of their debts, and then they start to assume a portion of the rent. And then within a 12-month period, our case managers work with them and financial advisors so that eventually they will assume the lease. And that program has been extremely successful. And, you know, the veterans being able to take on their own lease, going from a homeless situation and now to independent living is pretty awesome to be a part of. And then we have our bridge program. It's a 90-day program, again, with case managers assisting veterans that are dealing with addiction. It's a 90-day program to help them, again, get into an apartment and then independent living. We have two facilities located here in Haverhill, one in Methuen, and then one in Bedford that accommodate those programs.
I really believe that yours is a model that people and organizations around the country can learn from, and I'm sure you're interacting with many as we go along. But I did want to have you comment on your recent article on the front page of the website. I was so moved, first of all, to know about your background as a submariner, a veteran, but also your dad and other relatives, some of whom never came home. Talk about what this means to you to give back to other veterans at this point in your career.
Veterans are, it was actually an easy transition from when I was on active duty as a Navy chief. You know, I felt one of my primary responsibilities is to take care of the troops. Mission first, obviously, but taking care of the troops. You don't take care of your troops, you're not going to meet your mission requirements. So retiring, I ended up obtaining the position of Veteran Services Director for the town of North Andover in Boxford. And transitioning from taking care of the troops to taking care of the veterans was pretty easy but meaningful. And I did that for 15 years. And shortly after retiring from that position, I assumed the executive director here at the outreach. Not just taking care of the veterans close to my heart is the Gold Star families. As mentioned on my webpage article there, my grandmother was a Gold Star mother. She had six daughters and one son, and she lost her only son during World War II. And so we were always, you know, when I was brought up as a youngster, I understood the sacrifices needed to keep this country free, and understanding what the flag represents and the importance of service before self. My father was came back from World War II. He was D-Day plus two. And a hard worker, just like the majority of our World War II veterans, when they came home, they went right to work and started rebuilding this country. And we certainly owe all of them a debt of gratitude.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if people get a chance to read your words, I think they'll be touched, and they'll also learn a little bit about why you do what you do. I really would wanted you to monitor. I really wanted you to echo those. Before we wrap, I think it's important for you to use this forum to ask for whatever help we in the community can give. I know donations are always a part of the program, but seriously, what can people do if they want to pitch in and help you with your cause?
Sure. First and foremost, they can obviously go to our webpage and get additional information about what we do. And there's a place where they can donate. And, even if it's a 50 cents a day, you know, at the end of the month, that's $15. That's basically enough money to take a veteran out to lunch. And that means a lot. Or you can donate your time. You know, if you have a particular trade or services, you can donate your time, or you can help with our food pantry. Right now, today we're handing out food at the Northern Essex Community College, and allows the veterans to drive up, and we put the food right in their car. They don't even have to get out. So that is a big service to our veterans that have pre-existing conditions and don't want to take the chance of going to the grocery store. They can call our front office at 978-372-3626 if they're interested in volunteering their time or contributing a monetary donation. It certainly would be beneficial. We have two big programs that we're working on right now with ones with Lowell 5, where they're providing financial advisors for our veterans, and that to encourage them to save money so that they can work towards actually purchasing their own home through their VA home loan program. But Lowell 5 will also steer them towards a grant that's available. So if a veteran, say, saves $200 a month, the grant will match that $200. So now they have $400 in the bank. And that's an added incentive to encourage them to save even more money for the next month. And again, that's so that eventually they'll be able to have enough funding to purchase a home of their own. And then another program we're really proud of working on is our endowment program. John Ford's been the leader for that. And basically, we're encouraging corporations to provide an annual donation to our endowment program that's Morgan Stanley has volunteered to operate at no cost. And that program, we believe, will allow us to draw off the interest every 2 to 3 years and allow us to build affordable housing for our veterans. So we're really excited about that, as it's taken off quite effectively right now.
Well, there's so much going on, but the positives far outweigh the negatives in terms of what benefits are coming to these well-deserving individuals. And I'm so thrilled that I got the chance to meet you, albeit a little bit A little bit odd, yeah. Not seeing each other, not shaking hands, but that'll change in the future. But for people who want to know more, give us the web address, if you would.
Sure. The Veterans Northeast Outreach Center can be reached at VNEOC.org.
Okay, VNEOC.org. Ed, thank you for spending a little time with me, and I know you've got a lot of work to do, and you don't stop. So thanks for taking a moment to inform us. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, and I just like to give a shout-out to our staff who has done extraordinary work during this COVID pandemic because of their due diligence in keeping things sanitized and keeping our veterans informed. We have had zero cases of COVID with our staff or our veteran residents, and that's pretty outstanding.
Thanks again to Ed Mitchell and the entire staff and volunteers from VNOC, the Veterans Northeast Outreach Center, on the web at www.vneoc.org. Find out more and certainly donate if you can. Now, I promised you a couple of segments today, so in part two of our 4th of July special, more on the campaign, sewthemasks.com. My guest is Bruce Platzman of AIS, a local office furniture design and manufacturer in Massachusetts. This is a story of Americans on the home front, pitching in where and when it counts. So we return on mic with Bruce and the inspiring tale of Rosie and her fans. Here you are, a company that's designing and manufacturing office furniture, and the pandemic strikes, and you decide maybe we can do something to help. Tell me the story.
Well, on March 17th, Governor Baker put the state into a lockdown, except for essential businesses. And we were sitting around, my executive team, and we said, we thought at that point, as a manufacturer of office furniture, we would be considered non-essential and we would return at some point. And, by coincidence, that day we received a fairly large order from Brigham and Women's Hospital related to COVID. And we went before the commission that the governor had set up that if you wanted to try to have them determine whether you were essential or non-essential. When we pleaded our case and got before the board, they came back very quickly and said, you guys are very essential because, as they explained it, if we don't show up with the furniture and the nurses and the doctors and don't have a place to admit patients that are COVID-related, they don't have a place to put their computers, their laptops, et cetera, et cetera. So fortunately for us, we have 700 factory workers that are manufacturing office furniture, and we were deemed essential. Now, with that, we manufacture about 500 office chairs per day in a regular situation, and that is done through 5 assembly lines with lots of seamstresses as well. We immediately made a decision to close down one of those lines and dedicate that to making masks. And in the beginning, we were making masks for our own use, and then we expanded out to the police department, fire department, some of the nursing homes in town in Leominster, as well as UMass, which has a hospital in Leominster as well. And the response was overwhelming, and could you guys expand this even further? And at that time, someone reminded me about Rosie the Riveter in World War II and that whole story about how everybody rallied around the flag, no matter what your beliefs were. Everybody had the same common goal. How can we come out of this war and be the United States, and how can we be victorious? And that's how we got the idea. And so I called the team together. We said, can we create an environment that is similar to Rosie the Riveter, but sewing masks and getting everybody to rally around the cause?
Right. And let's do this. Let's tell people that this is an ongoing program, and we all know pandemics like these last a while, and coronavirus is not going away. Sewthemasks.com, and we'll explain how it works in a second. But are you even surprised at how this thing has taken off somewhat?
Yes and no. I mean, we're a small company, although in the footprint of manufacturing within Massachusetts, we're a fairly sizable company with about 700 employees here, but small in the sense that on a national level. And when we reached out and came up with our video on developing Rosies and getting people to volunteer, I had no idea that we'd get over 500 in the first week in from 38 different states. I didn't know the reach would be that deep and that far. And it's been very rewarding, and some of the stories have been fantastic.
Well, let's talk about the mechanics of it, because it's not just you guys sewing these masks, and we'll talk about the quality of the masks. They're outstanding. But you're involving the community as a whole. I love the concept. Explain it to us, Bruce.
Well, the whole idea on a call for action is that whether you're an individual sitting at home somebody that has a sewing machine, or you're a Fortune 500 company, or everything in between. This was a cause that we all had to rally around, and we have to continue to rally around to get through and come out the other end. And so we were getting people to say, how can we help? We had people calling up. I'm a 92-year-old lady. I'm sitting at home. I have a sewing machine. I can make masks for you. Can't make thousands, but I can make a few hundred for you. Can I help? And from that, we said, okay, how do we get our corporate sponsors to participate so that we can take this from a small situation in Leominster, Mass., and make it more national in scope, and actually came up with the idea that if we were successful, we would be able to donate 1 million masks to the people in need. And there are so many great agencies and so many people that are in need and that are at risk for a quality mask. And that's where the idea came about. And I have been a little surprised at how successful it's been so early.
Yeah, it's taking on sort of a national sense of energy, which is amazing. I want to jump back, though, for a second. As you and I talked on the phone, I'm a big student of World War II history, the culture, the historic battles and everything else. And one of the things about this that's really cool is the retro aspect of Rosie the Riveter. And you've got a great billboard campaign and an online campaign. It features an animation that looks very much like the original Rosie back, what, 70 years ago?
70 years ago. And that was intentional. And
yep.
The lead Rosie that's illustrated there is actually an employee at the company. And I saw her making masks one day, and her smile is just completely so infectious in a very positive way. And I asked her if she would be our spokesperson, and she said, absolutely. And that's where that really came from. And actually, my daughter is the one that illustrated her. And so that's how it took off from there. And it is retro intentionally to really play off of that. There have not been many times in our history where everybody's really rallied around and really and had that call for action where everybody had the same cause in mind. Everybody was pulling in the same direction. COVID-19 is one of those.
Right. It certainly has been a rocky experience for the entire world, but it has brought people together, and we probably need it this summer more than ever with what's going on in other parts of the culture. But let's talk about logistics again. So your goal is to hit 1 million masks manufactured, sewn by people from all over. And talk a little bit more about the partnerships that you've developed, because it's business helping business as well.
Yeah. So we've reached out to other businesses, some that we have relationships with, others that we know are philanthropic. And we've asked them, the way the concept works is we ask them to sponsor 1,000 masks at $4 each, and we'll go over the quality, as you said, later, and how they're different. And what we do is we send out to the Rosies a kit of 50 in a box. They return those. As I said, we have 500 Rosies. And then we return those to the sponsoring company, 50 to a box, so they get 20 boxes. And studies show that it is so much more effective and rewarding for an individual or a corporate entity to be hands-on when they're doing philanthropic endeavors. In other words, they get 20 of these boxes back. They give one to one of their employees and say, why don't you bring this to your favorite charity or agency within the city that you live or work? Give it to another. So they're giving out 20 boxes to 20 different employees. Some are going to nursing homes, some hospitals, police departments, the homeless shelters, the food banks, places like that. So what a rewarding experience for a company to build their philanthropic brand and their employees to get really hands-on. It makes them feel good about their company, their brand's enhanced, and everybody wins. The community is benefiting as well.
That's awesome. Let's talk about the masks themselves. People are now so familiar with the term PPE and understanding how critical the quality has to be. And, of course, you make quality furniture, so that makes sense that you would make a quality mask. But what makes the mask special?
You know, early on when we heard all the different nightmares we all did that, you know, all the counterfeit masks that were coming from overseas and the paper masks, how they could only be worn one shift and they were very uncomfortable. And then, you know, the questioning of the quality, even if you had one, we wanted to set out to make a mask that was different. So we came up with first a fabric mask that was very comfortable. It has adjustable straps that don't go around the ears, so you don't have that issue as well. We wanted something to also be reusable. So these are washable up to 30 times. And we believe beyond that, but they've been tested up to 30 times. But the most important part of this mask is the two layers of fabric. The outer layer is treated with an antimicrobial product. And what that does is it takes care of a lot of bacteria that is in the air. Now, it We all know that COVID's a virus, so it will take care of lots of bacteria, but not necessarily viruses. But the other thing is we also treat it with a water repellency, which takes care of your small water droplets as well as large droplets. And that's how COVID is transmitted, so that we can repel, again, both small droplets and large droplets from penetrating the mask. And that inner layer acts as a filtering material, and it's soft to the touch as well. So it's reusable, it's good quality, and it accomplishes a lot of the safety guidelines that the CDC has set forth as well.
And one more thing about your team, and you said 700 workers plus, this has to have had a very positive effect on the morale because everyone's bothered and concerned and worried, but giving some people the chance to step up and help out has to be positive. Can you comment on that?
We've had many people want to volunteer and have volunteered for the different areas in our factory, in particular the one that was sewing masks so they could participate firsthand. Other employees have brought forth, hey, I have a grandmother or my mother's at home with a sewing machine. She'd like to help out. Can she participate? We had another great story where a 92-year-old lady said, I can only make 2 masks a day, but I want to help. Can I participate? I said, of course. Send her 50 masks. If it takes, you know, a couple months to get them back, who cares? You know, we're making this lady part of the solution and making her feel good in the process as well. And that's what it's all about, yeah, curing it and making people to participate because they want to.
Well, it's an outstanding program. SewTheMasks.com. It's only going to be more popular as the summer months move on, but I'm glad we're able to get together and share on a podcast and in other areas because the momentum is there, and it just makes you feel good to know you're helping other people this way.
It certainly does, and people ask, why are you doing this? And, you know, the company has always been very philanthropic, and, you know, whether it's the day-to-day charities. We're very involved with the United Way. I'm on the board of directors there as well as Make-A-Wish. And it's something that, you know, it's our way of giving back to this cause, if you want to call it that. But, you know, I hope we're not wearing masks in 3 months or 4 months. But if we all are, I want to be part of the solution, and I want to be able to say AIS donated 1 million masks to the people in need in the United States. And if we accomplish that, it's going to be a great feeling, not only for myself, but for the 700 people that work here.
Much appreciation to Bruce Platzman and all of the employees and others at AIS, all of the companies stepping up to partner in this effort, and most of all, to you throughout the country who are taking up Rosie's call to sew 1 million masks. Again, go to SewTheMasks.com to join the cause. The story of America is her people. With all of the problems we face, let's not forget the good that will always overshadow the bad. May you enjoy a happy, healthy, and safe 4th of July. This is Jordan, as always, saying be well so you can do good. Take care.